Jeff Meller from ESPN 1000. Thanks for joining me. How are you doing tonight?
Not too bad, Will. Just hanging out at Wilmot Mountain, which is the ski team, the mountain that my son races for. So I usually spend my Thursday evenings taking him to his ski practice. And so figured it was a perfect time because I'm usually kind of just doing some research, killing some time. So it was a perfect opportunity to strap it up for an hour or so with you. So what's going on, man?
Yeah, it's not only a tradition of us kind of talking about the Super Bowl every year, but I think it's been kind of a constant theme of you typically taking your kids on like ski trips and stuff like that. Have you ever skied?
I've skied a couple times, but I'm actually more of a snowboarder myself.
Nice.
So I don't, but you know, definitely do a lot of snowboarding while my kids and my wife are skiers, but you know, we still get down the mountain all the same. So yeah, no, but I do a lot of snowboarding during the winter seasons.
Yeah, so I've never skied or snowboarded, but we'll save that for another day. But yeah, talking about this upcoming Super Bowl matchup, Super Bowl 59, Chiefs and the Eagles. We've done this before in Super Bowl 57, same matchup basically again. Are you excited personally for this matchup?
Yeah, look, anytime you've got history at stake and Mahomes and Chiefs with an opportunity to become the first team to ever three-peat is pretty cool. And at the same time, I do think the Eagles boost the best roster in the NFL, 1-53. I think there's just, you know, that's the one thing that the Eagles have going for them where I think it's actually a really tough game to call. So I can see a pass for the Eagles to win this Super Bowl, but of course, then you're going against Patrick Mahomes and everything the Chiefs have done over the last few years. So, you know, even though I think the Eagles have about as good a chance as any team this year that has had the opportunity to go up against the Chiefs, at the same time, you know, betting against Mahomes, Andy Reid, and everything the Chiefs have been able to accomplish is a daunting task. So, right now, I don't know which way I'm really picking or leaning. But because of that, I think it should be a very interesting and entertaining Super Bowl. I don't think either way, I don't think we're going to get a blowout, you know, like we saw in the NFC Championship game. I think both these teams will keep it close at the very least. So because that's what I expect, I do anticipate being excited for the Super Bowl when it rolls around here in a little over a week.
You know what? The Chiefs are definitely familiar playing close games pretty much all season. They won an NFL record 17 straight one possession games dating back to the 2014 loss to the Raiders on Christmas Day in 2023, which is funny because I don't think anyone thought they were going to lose that game. And ever since, they've been virtually perfect. I think the Chiefs, you said it, and that's the way I feel, that at least for me personally, I cannot count out Mahomes no matter what. I refuse to pick against the Chiefs until they finally lose. And the Eagles could be the team that does that. They are, as you said, probably the best overall team in the league, but it's just hard for me to pick against Mahomes. As far as the actual matchup, are you surprised, even though we know how great the Chiefs are, how great, as you said, Reid and Mahomes and everyone on that team can be, are you surprised that it did end up being this matchup, or did you think Buffalo would finally get through KC, or even a team like Detroit was going to maybe, you know, maybe it'd be their year, or in the end, are you like, yeah, these are the two best teams representing their conference?
So, no, this is actually what I expected when the playoffs, right before they began. This was my prediction of the Super Bowl matchup, Eagles against Chiefs. So that doesn't surprise me at all. Maybe the path to which they both got there surprised me a little bit because I honestly thought that the Ravens would beat the Bills. And I think if you go back to that game in the divisional round, that game, the Ravens seemed like a more talented team, but they made obviously a couple of critical mistakes that ended up costing them ultimately, right? And so because they couldn't avoid that, they had the best shot of beating the Chiefs in the AFC. And so when you saw the game unfold in Arrowhead, that didn't shock me. The way the Bills go about playing the Chiefs in big games and playoff games, I guess, in particular, it leaves a lot to be desired. Sean McDermott's a little too cautious for my liking. The Bills ended up, I know they ended up fumbling the ball, but they recovered every single one of their fumbles. Mm-hmm. And that was actually when I think when you start to like drill down and look at the game, you know, it's little things like that. Like, okay, the Bills had fumble luck in their game against the Chiefs because they ended up recovering every single ball that was fumbled in that game. And still, they couldn't take advantage of that. And I just think that kind of goes to show that the Chiefs as a whole, as a team, it's not as simple as just Patrick Mahomes is great. Yep. We know that, but it's also that the Chiefs defense is consistently underrated, right? And I think, you know, Steve Spagnuolo has his defense ready for big situations. He, you know, keeps big blitzes in his back pocket, confusing blitzes at the right time. And you saw that obviously on that 4th and 5, which was really the critical play, or one of the biggest plays in that game. And so the Bills, they just consistently kind of shoot themselves in the foot in big moments, and they've yet to kind of overcome it. And, you know, it's little things like that. It's their reluctance to really lean on James Cook in a game when he was having a lot of success against the Chiefs. You know, I don't know why they didn't just stick with the run a little bit more in that game when, you know, go back to their performance against both Baltimore and Denver. They had some insane drives where they just consistently ran the ball over and over again down their opposition's throat, and they didn't really do that. It's almost like, you know, they had the ball with a chance to take the lead with about 3 minutes left in that game. And if they would have operated a 4-minute offense to perfection, obviously not quite 4 minutes because they had 3 minutes in that game, but they had the chance to kind of milk the clock while driving down to take the lead and leave Patrick Mahomes without an opportunity to come back and, you know,
yeah,
win the game. And they failed to do that. So, you know, they had the Bills had the opportunity to do it, and they didn't take advantage of it. And that's been their MO now for 5 straight seasons. And so I don't know, until they show me that they can actually do the little details against the Chiefs when needed, I'm going to continue to pick against them in that particular match against the Chiefs. So so that didn't really surprise me that the Chiefs advanced to the Super Bowl, because I expected that. And then, you know, the Eagles, the Lions, with their defense just being shredded by injury, I had no faith going into the playoffs that they were going to make it to the Super Bowl. I don't necessarily, I can't say that I thought the Commanders were going to win, but I certainly thought they had a chance to win that game. So when it kind of unfolded the way it did, it didn't shock me by any means, because, like I said, their defense was just ravaged by injury. So they were always going to need their offense to probably go out and score 40-plus points if they were going to find a way to get through the NFC. And I just didn't think they were going to be able to do that for, you know, 2 straight weeks against, you know, the Eagles being the one team that I figured we'd find a way to beat the Lions. So it didn't shock me that the Eagles find themselves in the Super Bowl against the Chiefs.
Yeah, on Sunday going into the day, that was my expectation, was Eagles and the Chiefs. And I like Buffalo a lot. Baltimore has been great. But when it comes to playing in the playoffs, I don't expect either one to necessarily beat the Chiefs. If it happened, I guess I wouldn't be too surprised. It's just I'm just too used to the Chiefs doing all the little things right. As you said, it is beyond Mahomes, but also if the ball is in his hands in the final couple minutes of a game when they need him to score, they're probably going to find a way. As far as the actual Super Bowl matchup, are you looking at it from the Eagles' perspective of, like, Saquon Barkley? Well, I guess what the Chiefs' defense can do to stop or contain him, but are you thinking Barkley has to have maybe not a monster game like he did last Sunday against Washington, but has to have more along the lines of a game like that if the Eagles are going to win, or really just containing Mahomes on the defensive side and the Eagles get enough offense by Hurts, but definitely by Barkley, right?
So, yeah, the Eagles have been able to, you know, rely on their – it's not just Saquon Barkley. Obviously, he's one of, if not the best running backs in the NFL. You know, I'd put him – I put Jahmyr Gibbs up there with him when it comes to just, you know, what the, you know, talents and what they're capable of. But, you know, Saquon Barkley's one of the top 3 running backs in the NFL. That's clearly been made apparent by anybody who doubted that. You know, what you get from him when you pair him with, I would say, probably the best offensive line in the league. It's clearly a dynamic duo, right? So you got the best. You got, you know, 2,005 rushing yards from Saquon in the regular season. And you know, that's been their path to victory for the most part this year. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be if they're going to beat the Chiefs. I think, yeah, they're going to ride Saquon Barkley for the most part. I don't know if he has to go, you know, over 150 per se, because, he went for 118 last week, and they kind of let him, you know, rest on the bench after they had a huge lead because he was dealing with that calf injury that they were working on throughout the game. So you wonder if that will, you know, in any way limit him during the Super Bowl. If it does, obviously that would not be a great thing for the Eagles. But no, I expect them to run the ball, and, you know, the Chiefs defense, though, again, I consistently is underrated, and what will they be able to do against this great offensive line? That's the hard part. I don't pretend to know how it's going to unfold. I think you get a little bit of both, right? I don't think the Chiefs will completely shut them down, but I do think they'll have more success, I expect, than the Commanders did stopping the run game, because they've just been a better run defense. Spagnuolo's defense, they're amongst the best tackling defenses in the league. So I think having that as your opposition, being the Eagles, is going to be, it's going to be probably the toughest defense they've played all year. So we'll see. But at the same time, this version of the Chiefs is not as explosive as it was years ago. And, you know, so they kind of moved the chains. They don't have those explosive plays. So I don't think the Chiefs will by any means run away and hide. So I expect, you know, if the Chiefs can limit their turnovers, they'll probably end up having a chance to lean into Mahomes late in the game to try and go down and lead them to a game-winning drive, something that I don't trust Jalen Hurts as much to do if he's forced to do it. So I guess as I talk my way through it, I would probably bet the Chiefs when push comes to shove.
Yeah.
But I do think the Eagles' overall roster is a little more talented. So that's why I'm excited, because I think they're both two very good teams matched up here. So I don't expect either team to run away with this one.
Are you surprised? It's probably too simple from like a Bears fan perspective to just say, oh, Matt Nagy's the OC in Kansas City, so the offense sucks now. But are you surprised that the offense maybe isn't as explosive as it used to be? Or is it more like, hey, they know how to win and grind it out when it matters and they score when they have to? But are you surprised that they're not as explosive as we've seen?
Not necessarily, because they still, the difference was Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Clearly, threatening everybody deep. You had to really be aware of where he was on the field and what he opened up underneath for Travis Kelce and everybody else who was a member of the Chiefs back then was, and then Travis Kelce was, 3 years younger when they were that explosive offense. They're not the same type of team anymore. I know they drafted Xavier Worthy, who, set the combine record with his 40 time. But at the same time, Xavier Worthy is not the same player that Tyreek Hill was and probably still is at this point. So even though he's got, some of that skill set, he's not exactly the same player. He doesn't threaten defenses in quite the same way, whether it's partially because of his, his inability, at least so far, to prove that he's got the same type of, catch radius ability that Tyreek Hill does. And they're not, he hasn't really... they'll throw a lot of those screen passes, the bubble screens, because they'd be Worthy underneath those motion passes where they'll get Worthy moving laterally towards the line of scrimmage so that he can utilize that speed. But down the field, he doesn't threaten defenses the way Tyreek Hill did, at least not yet. Worthy hasn't. Now, will he be able to, as his career continues? Potentially, and I think the Chiefs, ultimately, they hope he can do that, but he really hasn't tapped into that part of his game. The opportunity to catch balls deep, he hasn't really mastered that at the NFL level. So I just think the Chiefs methodically move the chains, and so it's a different type of offense. And because of that, but what you can't deny is that Patrick Mahomes has seemed to master that as well, right? Where unlike any other team in the league, any other quarterback in the league, he can drive you down the field slowly but surely without turning the ball over, at least more consistently than most. He can go on those 7, 8, 9, 10 play drives and still do it consistently enough where the Chiefs can score enough points. Now, again, though, I think it'll be a tougher because the Eagles have, you know, all over the field, they've got playmaking defensive players. So it will be a little more challenging for him to do it. But he still does usually find a way to score 24, 27 points. And so ultimately, will Jalen Hurts and the Eagles offense be able to outscore them at that pace? I don't know. And I think that's really what we're going to that'll be the test. If the Eagles offense can end up scoring more than 27 points, I think they can beat the Chiefs. I don't know if they'll be able to do that, though, against the Chiefs defense.
Yeah, it's been quite the turnaround, I guess, for the Chiefs and how they've been able to do this three straight year. Well, you know, 2+ years counting in terms of winning championships, kind of different ways. I know the first time I think it was more offense, and then the second time it was more defense. And now it's kind of like maybe more defense, but just in general, it's impressive. Obviously, it's impressive, as you said, they can be the first team to win three straight Super Bowls. The way they've been able to adjust on the fly, and it doesn't hurt to, of course, have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. You talked about Travis Kelce. I don't know if he's talking about retiring or whatever, but I think I've heard that out there. Do you think this could be his last year?
So, I haven't heard him say the words retire specifically. I think he's talked the last couple seasons at the end of the year about kind of, you know, taking it year by year and evaluating it. And I think anybody who's watched Kelce this year, when you see him catch the ball, he seems like he's significantly slower than he was in years past. But doesn't mean he still doesn't know how to find soft spots in the zone better than anybody in the league. And so he's still a threat. But you see it when you look at the numbers, you know, his yards per catch has continued to fall. And, you know, this year, aside from the one long play that he broke in the divisional round against the Texans, you know, which even still as he was, I think it was like, what was it, 48 yards or something against the Texans, even though he did, it took him forever to cash in on all the open field in front of him, and he was moving significantly slower. This year, he averaged less than 10 yards per catch. Actually, he averaged less than 9 yards per catch this year. He had 97 catches for 823 yards, which, you know, listen, he still caught 97 balls, but that's the first year in his career where he's fallen below 10 yards per catch. And not, like I said, not just 10, but he was underneath 9. He's 8.5 yards per catch, Will. So that's significantly lower than his career numbers, which, you know, in his career, he's averaged 12.1 yards per catch. So he's usually been in that 12 to 13 yard per catch range. He's not the same player he once was. So, no, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, they, you know, completed the three-peat. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he called the career after this season, either way, to be honest with you, because it does look like he's slowed down quite a bit. And so I think he could, if he wanted to, he could probably still come back next season and be a guy who catches 80 balls. But if he's only going to do it for 8 or 9 yards per catch, does he want to continue to do that? I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as Kelce goes, like, I know he has to go through, like any player has to go through the grind of the offseason and training and all that, but like it just seems like in his position, he should just try to ride out the championships as often as he can or as much as he can. But yeah, like you said, probably a year-by-year type thing, and so we'll see. And it's kind of funny. Like I said, you've got Matt Nagy on the offensive side for the Chiefs. You've got Vic Fangio on the Eagles defensive coordinator side. So finally, both Bears coaches ended up in the Super Bowl, right?
yes, yeah, of course. Not the way that Bears fans hoped it would take place, though, right? Obviously. You know, I'd be curious to see. Matt Nagy did, you know, get his name circulated again a little bit in the coach hiring cycle this time around. I believe he was, you know, the Jets and Saints both requested permission to interview him. I don't know, because I was so locked in on what the Bears were doing.
Yeah.
I don't know if he completed an interview with both of them, but I remember both teams requested permission for that. So I wonder, you know, if they win a third Super Bowl and they continue to have some success next season, which I don't see anybody in the world who'd be betting against another 10 or 11 win season for the Chiefs with Mahomes as their quarterback. So, you know, as long as he continues to be the OC, at least in name,
Yep.
You know, maybe he'll get some interview opportunities based on just the success the Chiefs are having. And listen, it didn't go great for the Bears, but honestly, he had he won the Coach of the Year his first year as the Bears head coach. He took them to the playoffs in 2 of 4 seasons. So I think those, you know, numbers are things that he can throw on his resume, and, you know, Coach of the Year is his rookie season as a head coach. So he's got some things that look good. And as you kind of like, you kind of like zoom out, you get a little bit farther away from the actual time when it took place. I think it's possible that Nagy could, you know, if there's a season when you have like 6, 7, 8 head coaching openings, which, you know, this year we had 7, I think, right? Mm-hmm. So it seems like almost every year you have 6, 7, or 8 openings. You know, you could get to a spot where Nagy ends up looking like a good bet for a team that wants an offensive guy who, you know, I don't think he's ever going to be able to move himself back into like the top, you know, the top echelon of hot names, but he might be good enough to paint his, you know, make his case for a guy who, you know, if there's enough openings, he could be appealing enough to a team that doesn't necessarily land, you know, the top candidates. So I don't think it's out of the question for him to maybe get another spot or another job as a head coach here down the road. And listen, I think anybody, you know, the more experience you get, having done it once before, I think he might actually have a shot to be a better head coach the second time around, you know, just through the experience that he gained having done it the first time.
Yeah, I don't think he ever won fewer than what, 7 or 8 games each year? I think.
I don't remember what he did his last year. I don't remember what the number was, but I think he ended up having like a winning 6 record as a head coach here.
Yep.
I'm rolling through. Yeah, he was 6-11 that final year in 2021 for the Bears. But, you know, 34-31, and, you know, the one thing is, too, you look at the Bears with Matt Eberflus, everybody, I think, you know, that's one thing that actually kind of goes in Nagy's favor, right?
Yeah.
You can point to, hey, the Bears organization wasn't the most buttoned up before I got there. So, you know, he can probably sell the story that he had a winning record in the Bears organization despite some of the dysfunction. So don't discount that either what's going on in head coaching interviews.
Yeah, when you look at Nagy's coaching career, it doesn't look too bad, especially when you consider the Chiefs side. And then with the Bears, he could be like, yeah, and I also had Mitch Trubisky as my quarterback. So, you know, you could probably spin it, like you said.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely when push comes to shove, you know, and he's going through the process. I think that's something he probably leans into a little bit. And then he can tell you, listen, he can tell you what he learned, you know, the mistakes he made the first time through with the Bears. And I think that's probably if you know, you collect your thoughts and you put together a good narrative, I think he probably can make a decent case for why he would be better the second time around. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily bet on him becoming one of the best coaches of all time, like Bill Belichick was able to do. Mm-hmm. But the reason I bring Bill Belichick up is because it's, you know, he had a head coaching stint in Cleveland before things went well in New England. So, you know, even some of the best coaches in history, it takes a little bit of time to learn, you know, about how you're going to do things right. And, you know, that's why with the Bears hiring of Ben Johnson, like as excited as I am about the Bears kind of landing the hot coaching candidate during this cycle, I'm also realistic about understanding that, you know, it takes a little bit of time usually for a first-time head coach to kind of get his footing and execute his plan. So I think, you know, that's the one thing for Bears fans you have to be aware of, is that it might take a little bit of time. Even though I think Ben Johnson is really smart and I like what I've heard from him, it's going to take him a little bit of time to get his arms around, you know, what he needs to do in Chicago if he's going to get it moving in the right direction.
Going back to the Bills for a second, where do the Bills go from here? If, you know, I assume they're not going to fire McDermott. I assume he's going to be back next year. But if they win 11 games next season and lose in the playoffs, is it like we have to go in a different direction? Or is it more like we just keep running into the same great team every year?
So, listen, it's a fair question. It's hard to put anything, to crystallize anything when you don't know, you know, how it's going to play out. I think certainly, you know, it would depend on the fashion and how they would lose next year, right? Like, I think you can make the argument that should they consider, you know, making a change now? Because, you know, ultimately, what is going to dramatically change with the Chiefs? You now lost to them four times in the playoffs with the McDermott Josh Allen combination. Most people will tell you, you know, they don't really put it on Josh Allen. He's played really well in all those games, and despite his best efforts, he hasn't had the support from his team and from Sean McDermott. And you know, I watched Kurt Warner break down the 4th-and-5 play that a lot of people have seen now and dissected the blitz that Spagnuolo sent. And I thought Kurt Warner, Hall of Famer, obviously, two-time league MVP, I thought he did a really good job of breaking it down and talking about the protections that the Bills set and how he kind of disagrees with just their general philosophy and what they're doing. And he did a really good, you know, it's like a 10.5-minute breakdown. Anybody who hasn't seen it already, you can go seek it out. Obviously, Kurt Warner's going to articulate it better than me. But, you know, he does a really good job of kind of pointing out some of the issues on that particular play. And, it, you know, obviously that's the one play that is under the microscope. But there's other times throughout the Bills game when, you know, when you run into a really good opponent that's a really well-coached team, sometimes, you know, their talent isn't good enough to overcome some of those issues. And so it's hard to just say, oh, yeah, you should definitely move on. But I don't know. Sean McDermott, I'm not overly impressed with the job he's done. Mm-hmm. You know, part of the issue, too, has been that, you know, he is kind of the head of the defense. And consistently, the Chiefs have found ways to put 30-plus points up on the Bills, right? And so Josh Allen seems to be doing his part, but Sean McDermott, it's not necessarily doing his. And so, you know, I personally would be looking to get off of Sean McDermott if I were the Bills, but I understand the problem when you do make a deep run into the playoffs is that now it's hard to make a coaching change, right? Mm-hmm. In the middle of the season, or not in the middle of the season, but after you've been eliminated when all the good coaches have already been scooped up, right? Yeah. So what's the Bills' move then? What are you going to do? You're going to elevate Joe Brady to be your head coach? I think that's probably the biggest what you could advocate for, because Joe Brady obviously has been a hot name and a lot of teams have interviewed and thought about. But I'm not necessarily sold that that would be the perfect solution either. Mm-hmm. So, like, it really, you'd have to present me with what the alternatives are to Sean McDermott, where I could really get on board with that. But, you know, if you send up some feelers and maybe you said, hey, Mike McCarthy, who's going to take the year off, it sounds like, hey, Mike McCarthy, you know, just get ready. We want you to kind of, you know, back channels. Hit to talk to him and his representatives and say, hey, be ready next year. Watch our team, watch every game. And when all is said and done, just be ready to go, because if we have another disappointing showing in the playoffs, then I think they might just need to make a change, if nothing else, for change's sake. Because, you know, how many times can they continue to waste Josh Allen's best years? I think that's the one frustrating thing, is when you've got a great quarterback in place, you know, that's the hard part, is what do you do, right, as a franchise? That really is a tough spot to be in. And the Bills, you know, crazily enough, are the one franchise in NFL history that have gone through this and never been able to get, you know, on top of the mountain with Jim Kelly and the Bills' cake on offense back in the day when Marv Levy was their head coach, actually a local Chicago's own Marv Levy, local guy. You know, they've gone through this as a franchise. And so, you know, I could very easily see the Bills, if they don't get it done next year, I could definitely see them saying we need to make a change because we cannot waste Josh Allen's best years anymore if they don't find at least a way to get to the Super Bowl.
What if they gave Bill Belichick a call and see if he wanted to give the NFL another shot?
I mean, that's certainly a possibility too. Yeah. And it's great. It's certainly more appealing to me than
UNC.
Mike McCarthy. That's the question. Is Bill Belichick? I think we have to see how this year goes, right? And then what is his appetite to kind of leave North Carolina after 1 year? I think it's certainly possible. He'd certainly be a name that I think the Bills would have to strongly consider if things go poorly yet again. I think this year, though, I have a hard time seeing, I've seen that floated as the idea behind it. I just, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe I'm giving a football head coach too much credit. But I always find it off-putting when a head coach accepts a job, and then leaves before ever stepping foot, and doing what they agreed to do, right? Like my thought is, maybe next year I could see Belichick doing it. It's not impossible. It's not like it hasn't ever been done before. And yeah. I guess some people would argue Bill Belichick actually did do it with the Jets.
Yeah.
I guess he's shown you that he could, but I look at it as something that's, doing that is different than what Liam Cohen did with the Jaguars. Liam Cohen, agreed to a pay raise with the Bucs because the situation in Jacksonville was different than it was when he ended up accepting their head coaching job, because Liam Cohen didn't want to go work for Trent Baalke because the history of Trent Baalke is bad around the league. And so that made all the sense in the world. And then when the Jags said, hey, no, hold on, we're going to fire Trent Baalke and you can, help us pick the next GM, all of a sudden the situation changed dramatically. So I don't look at that as the same thing as what Bill Belichick would be doing, as if after having accepted the job in North Carolina for him to leave them high and dry. That would be, that would look pretty bad to me on Belichick. And obviously he can do whatever he wants to do. But I feel like Belichick has a little more integrity when it comes to leading a program. And I don't want to get into all the, I'm sure people who hate Belichick will say, blah, 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 Spygate, Deflategate. I think those are completely different scenarios than, leaving a program high and dry after having agreed to take it over and kind of leading it for at least a year than something like what his situation was with the Jets back in the day when he actually decided he wanted to go coach the Patriots. The whole Jets organization and his relationship with Bill Parcells had completely kind of changed, and it wasn't exactly what he initially agreed to back in the late 90s when the Jets wanted him to take over as their head coach. It'd be a little bit different. So I think it had to at least be a year later. So I feel like the Bills and McDermott, for maybe it's just a lack of options, but I think they'll probably go down it for at least one more year.
Yeah, like you said, Joe Brady might be an obvious replacement, but it could also maybe not be a great fit. So I think you're right. I think the Bills will probably go with McDermott for another year and kind of see how that all plays out. So pivoting to the Bears real quick, obviously, as you cover the Bears with ESPN Chicago. Okay, so real fast, I was in Vegas, and right outside of my window at the Mandalay Bay was the Raiders' new stadium. So I was like, oh, there's Ben Johnson's new home. And basically, I think it was the next day, news broke that the Bears were going to hire Ben Johnson. So were you surprised that the Bears, well, I think most people were hoping that they were going to get Ben Johnson, but what was your reaction when the Bears actually got that hire done? Like, were you expecting Johnson, or were you thinking, oh, it's going to be Mike McCarthy or someone else?
So I was definitely hoping that it would not be Mike McCarthy. He's not somebody who I'm enamored with as a Bears fan, so I did not want that to be the case. I was a little surprised that the Bears were able to land Ben Johnson, only in the sense that, let's run through it, right? So the Raiders, the one thing with the Raiders is, I kept having arguments with people, my coworkers at ESPN Chicago, in the hallways. Like, the Raiders job to me, aside from Tom Brady, like that job is not in any way better
awful
than what the Bears have, right? Like, you know, you look at it, and everybody talks about the NFC North being a difficult division, but it's not set up the way the AFC West is. You know what the Chiefs are. We've already talked ad nauseum about that here in the last 30 minutes. Well, they're set up to go for the next, you know, they look like they're set up for at least the next 4 or 5 years easily to be, you know, a very difficult opponent. We saw the Broncos in year two under Sean Payton. Once he got his quarterback in place in Bo Nix, he's got them winning. And Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert were also in the playoffs. So you've got three teams in the AFC West with really good head coaches and really good young quarterbacks. So that is an absolute meat grinder of a division. That is like the Raiders, like that to me is like, that's the worst spot to be in the league, because outside of Brock Bowers and Max Crosby, they don't have a quarterback in place. And so what are you going to do? The rest of the roster really doesn't look that great. So that, to me, the Raiders weren't like a compelling option. I was a little concerned, though. I thought if, you know, kind of what we went over with Liam Cohen, I thought because Shad Khan had publicly, you know, kind of fun, humorously with Trent Baalke on a video conference with him when he was being interviewed talking about the Jaguars opening, he talked about how they might have to consider letting Trent Baalke go if that's what it took to land a candidate. And so I think they kind of, fortunately for the Bears, I think the Jaguars kind of, you know, dropped the ball by not just cutting ties with Trent Baalke initially and making it known that they would do that. Like, they should have just blown him out and said, hey, we want to land the best head coaching candidate, and we're going to allow them to work with us to pick the next GM. Clearly, they were willing to do it. They should have made that. They should have done that immediately.
Yep.
Because they weren't willing to do that, I think they made it a little bit murky as to how desirable their job would be. What I didn't know about Ben Johnson, what we did later find out at his introductory press conference, Will, is that he has an affection for the city of Chicago, right? Mm. He loves the Midwest. He talked about how, you know, he made it a yearly tradition to go to see a Cubs game at Wrigley, because it was obviously close enough having lived in Detroit for the last few years. He talked about how he had, you know, him and his family had gone to Wrigley and, you know, just made it an annual tradition. So he had an affection for the city. So that was kind of playing in the Bears' favor. They've got Caleb Williams in place, and I think any good offensive mind knows that what you're working with a good, you know, a good piece of clay there. And so they had that going for them. It was just a matter of, okay, did Ben Johnson like and want to work with Ryan Poles? And clearly, like, we talked about how they've got a lot of familiar people, you know, overlapping. They didn't necessarily both work at Boston College at the same time, but they just missed each other by a year, to the point where they actually, I guess, they figured it out where the moment Ryan Poles left Boston College, that's when Ben Johnson got there, and he actually was working out of the same cubicle that Ryan Poles was working the previous year. So they've got a lot of overlap in terms of people that they know, right? Mm-hmm. Their same network. And so, like, you know, it was easy for, I'm sure, Ben Johnson to talk to people, you know, in his orbit, and Ryan Poles to talk to people in his orbit. And they both spoke glowingly about each other. So, you know, Ryan Poles, he's done a decent job with the Bears roster. It's, you know, there's been some missteps, obviously, but I think now that he's got Ben Johnson on the staff, I think Ben Johnson probably looks at it like, look, Ryan Poles is probably open to a lot of what Ben, you know, whatever Ben Johnson says, right? Like, Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles are, I think, going to be, you know, pulling on the same end of the rope. And ultimately, if Ben Johnson says, hey, listen, Ryan, like I want this guy, I think this guy is the guy we need to go out and draft, I think Ryan Poles is probably going to be open to it, because he hired Ben Johnson because he understands that Ben Johnson has proven, you know, for 3 years now that he can call plays offensively, he can build a great offense, and he needs him to help him develop Caleb Williams. He's done that with, you know, he resurrected Jared Goff's career, you know, to the point where people were saying, before the playoffs started, they were saying, hey, could Ben Johnson help the Lions and Jared Goff win the Super Bowl here? People were, you know, entertaining that notion. So, and I think it's possible they could have had their defense not been absolutely crushed by injuries. So, Ben Johnson's going, you know, I think Ryan Poles is going to work with Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson, you know, and they're just, neither guy seems like a guy who's like so hard headed and like, you know, just like where it's got to be their way. I think they're going to work together and try and find solutions. And it's in Ryan Poles' best interest to basically work with Ben Johnson because, hey, you know, if things don't work out well over the next year or so here, who's going to be the first guy out? It's not going to be Ben Johnson. Ryan Poles is going to be the guy who will be made the scapegoat if things don't work well.
Yeah.
So it's going to be in his best interest to, you know, work with Ben Johnson and do what he wants to do. And then, you know, basically arm him with what he needs to be armed with to make it work. And so I think they're going to have a probably pretty good working relationship. And, you know, if Ben Johnson is as good as a lot of people around the league believe he is, then that should be a successful path for the Bears. And I look at this division, and this is where I'll get back to the Raiders versus what the Bears have. And, you know, everybody's, you know, the NFC North has three playoff teams, certainly, but they're not built up. They're not as scary to me as, you know, the AFC West division opponents are, because, yes, the Vikings won 14 games, but we saw things, you know, fall apart on them for the two biggest games, the two final games of the season. Against the Lions when they could have won the division, and then promptly when they could have beaten the Rams in the playoffs when the Rams were dealing with all of the fires in California and being, you know, being forced to go and play a quote-unquote home game in Arizona in the playoffs and while trying to deal with fires at home. And the Vikings and Sam Darnold couldn't do that, right? And so even though I like Kevin O'Connell and I like some of the offensive pieces they have, I don't think they're like a team that you're like need to be absolutely petrified of. And then, we, you know, the Lions, hey, they're losing Ben Johnson. They're losing Aaron Glenn. And so I wouldn't be surprised at all if next year the Lions kind of are like, you know, struggling to win, you know, 8 or 9 games or 10 games. That wouldn't surprise me at all, Will. I'm probably going to predict the Lions to be like a 9-8 team next year. Mm-hmm. I just think they're losing way too much brain power from your coaching staff, and it's going to be tough. Everyone loves Dan Campbell as a soundbite. I don't love Dan Campbell as much as other people do, and I think him losing Ben Johnson is going to be one of the biggest blows from this offseason. So I think that's going to hurt him and the Lions. And then, you know, the Packers, I mean, Jordan Love, you know, as good as his first year starting was last year, he kind of, you know, took a couple steps back and wasn't as good as he was. You know, honestly, the reason the Packers, I think, made the playoffs was because Matt LaFleur recognized that he needed to lean into his run game with Josh Jacobs. And he did. But ultimately, you know, they weren't as good as they were last year. So I think this division for the Bears is not as daunting as people have made it out to be, even though they had three teams who made the playoffs last year.
How do you mentioned Jordan Love. How do you feel in general about Jordan Love? I know he kind of had the struggles and the injury last year, but yeah, in general, what's your view on Jordan Love?
I think he's, you know, a pretty solid young quarterback, but I'm not sold that he is, you know, like there's a clear, there's a clear top four in the league. They're all in they all reside in the AFC, right?
Yep.
It's obviously Mahomes, Lamar, Burrow, and Josh Allen. Those four are in a class by themselves. And then, I was really taken with what Jaden Daniels showed this year. So, it's 1 year. So, you know, CJ Stroud with everybody's darling last year, and now a year later,
yeah,
Jaden Daniels has stepped in and kind of filled that spot. And so, you know, I think it's wide open. I think Jordan Love has a chance to maybe, you know, fall into that, or not fall, but like he can move into that fifth spot. But I wouldn't necessarily put him there right now. I need to see more from him. He still throws too many interceptions for my liking. He also is, I don't know if it's because he is reluctant to run at times, but Jordan Love, I think he doesn't take advantage of his legs as much as he should, or at least even this year as much as he should have. And I'll be curious to see if he runs a little more next season. And if he does, I think that could have potentially opened the Packers offense a little bit more. But I think he needs to run a little bit more and not necessarily settle for trying to make he's got great arm talent, but he didn't always, you know, maybe it's partially because he doesn't have the elite receiving options that some of the other quarterbacks have, and he maybe relies on his receivers to a little too much, you know what I mean?
Yep.
He tries to make some throws to his guys and let them go win those one-on-one matchups, and maybe they let him down a little more this year than they did in the previous year. So I still need to see a little more from Jordan Love. I think he's got the potential to be a top 10 quarterback in the league, and because the NFC is so wide open, you know, he could be the best quarterback in the NFC, but I'm not ready to put him there just yet.
Yeah.
And so you know, it's more for me, it's more like wait and see, and we'll see where he goes from there.
You know, I was curious too, with Declan Doyle as the offensive coordinator now for the Bears, now he's not going to be calling plays, right? Ben Johnson will be calling plays, but when an offensive coordinator is in that position and they're not calling the plays, I assume he's probably going to be more so like helping with the offensive game plan, the preparation, coaching up the players, right? Like, it's not necessarily just calling plays, but there's more to it. So he'll be doing kind of the rest of that, I would imagine.
Yeah. So, you know, Will, I think for maybe people who love the NFL but don't quite know everything that goes into being on a coaching staff, I would recommend Michael Silver wrote a book recently. I believe it came out last summer. It's called The Why Is Everything. Mm. And it really details, it's a great book to read like right now or in the off season, because it does a really deep dive on Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur, Mike McDaniel, Raheem Morris, and a host of other young coaches in the league. And you know, I what it does is it does a good job, I think, of detailing like a little bit about what coaches are responsible for. And interestingly enough, like what Declan Doyle is doing for the Bears, I don't know, like no one knows exactly because they haven't done any of the work just yet.
Yeah.
But I envision him maybe having to do some of the work that Mike McDaniel did for Kyle Shanahan in his early days when they were both in Houston together, when Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans, and then again in Washington and then ultimately in San Francisco. Mike McDaniel, listen, you know, putting the play cards together, cutting up the plays, you know, doing all the stuff that Ben Johnson would do in Detroit, you know, he's going to lean on Doyle to do that now for him, because he's not going to have the time that he had when he was just the OC in Detroit. Now, Ben Johnson's going to be responsible for a lot more as the head coach, right? And so there's just, I think the biggest thing, you know, when you're a first-time head coach, when you're moving from like an OC to the head coach, it's just the time suck. All of a sudden, all the time that you had to develop your game plans, go over, you know, the previous like four games of your opponent, and like kind of like put together, you know, be the mastermind of what plays you want to you know, attack a defense with. Ben Johnson's going to find that he doesn't have the same type of time that he had when he was just the offensive coordinator. So I think that's really what's going to fall on Doyle's shoulders, is he's going to have to, you know, have that working relationship with Ben Johnson, where early in the week he puts together those plays and those play cards for Ben Johnson so that he can assess them in a timely manner and kind of like go through the like the grunt work. You know what I mean? That Ben Johnson's just not going to have the ability to do that he did in Detroit. And so that's, I think, where he's going to lean on Declan Doyle to really, you know, save him some time and do that. And that's the stuff that I think is going to be really valuable to Ben Johnson. I think that's probably, if I had to bet, because we're obviously none of us were privy to the interview process as Ben Johnson was going through it. But I think that's probably something that Doyle does well, and that Ben Johnson is going to, you know, lean on him. Okay, you're going to come up and you're going to put together those 500 plays that you think are going to be effective against the upcoming defense. And now then Ben Johnson will kind of like go through it and say, okay, he's going to, you know, pare it down from what he gets in front of him. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where Doyle's going to be able to start learning from Ben Johnson and start to make his bones in this league, because he's not going to be able to call plays, because that's obviously what Ben Johnson was brought here to do. And so that's where Doyle, I think, is going to have to kind of prove his mettle as an offensive coordinator. And so he's got the title, right? And I think as a 28-year-old, he's I don't know if he's the youngest offensive coordinator right now in this league, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is. And so he's probably going to be, under Ben Johnson for the next 2 or 3 years minimum. And then, listen, if the Bears have success, a lot of success with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams, there's no doubt that teams around the league will start, you know, sniffing around the Bears coaching staff, and they'll say, hey, they're having a lot of success there. Who's that bright young kid who's the offensive coordinator? And if the Bears have success, there's no doubt in my mind that 2 or 3 years from now, Doyle will, you know, will start to get some interviews as head coaching candidate. And then if he can impress in the interview process, well, listen, the NFL, it's a copycat league. They will absolutely be looking to give the next bright young mind, especially offensive mind, a crack to take over their program. And so it's a great opportunity for Doyle. The problem for him is that, you know, he won't be calling plays. And so we'll see where it goes. But it's a great opportunity for him. And honestly, I think Ben Johnson probably selected him because he thinks Doyle will be able to handle that those late nights, and he'll be able to do the work, you know, that Ben Johnson himself won't be able to do.
Yeah, that's what I figured, that, like you said, he's kind of doing more of like that quote-unquote grunt work. So we'll see how it all plays out next season.
I said the name of the book, right, by Michael Silver. It's called The Why Is Everything, in case I didn't, because I will say, anybody who's a football fan, if you're watching the NFL these days, it's a really, really good, it's one of the best football books I've read. And I've read a lot of them, but in the last, it's definitely probably the best football book I've read in the last decade, if you're somebody who follows the league closely, to kind of get an idea of what's going on inside, building. You know, it gives you a really good insight. And if you've been, and if you're somebody who hasn't, like, you know, you love the NFL, but you haven't really read a book about it, it's great because it is something that, like, really does gives a good insight about what's happened over the last 10 years of the league up until this last season. So again, it's called The Why Is Everything by Michael Silver. If you like football, you'll like that book.
Yeah, I need to check that out. I'll have to look for that book. So I was just curious, and you don't have to answer truthfully, or you don't even have to answer, but how many, so you do the, what is it, the post-game?
Post-post.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Doing the post-game for the Bears on ESPN Chicago, how many curse words or F-bombs were thrown around during that Hail Mary game, or just watching the Bears in general?
I it was weird because the way the season...
After a while, you got used to it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird because on one hand, I was really... I got a little mad at myself, and I talked to Waddle about this quite a bit.
Yeah.
Is I allowed myself, you know, to kind of I allowed myself to, you know, get drunk on the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And I'm old enough, Will. I've seen this long enough. I should have known better. Not because it was the Bears per se, but I should have... I'll say this. I gave Brian Poles way too much of the benefit of the doubt
yeah.
when it came to, you know, the offensive line. And I said, okay, I just, because he was a former offensive lineman, I said, okay, he should know what he's looking at. And maybe, just maybe, even though these guys don't have the pedigree, these guys like Ryan Bates and Coleman Shelton, you know, and then he hung on to Kevin Jenkins. And I will say Braxton Jones, I've never been sold on by any means, but Darnell Wright, because he was the 10th overall pick, you know, and it was his second year. I allowed myself to kind of dream up the best case scenario for the Bears offensive line. And I thought, okay, because I was never really a Justin Fields believer, I said, listen, Caleb Williams is going to come in, and if he gets rid of the ball quickly, that in itself will help the offensive lineman up front. And I think they'll, you know, I think just the whole unit will work better together. And that was my fault. I should not have given Ryan Poles that much credit, because he hadn't proven it yet. And I just basically, because he was a former offensive lineman, I said he should be able to identify what he's looking at. And maybe he's unearthed some gems here in Ryan Bates and Coleman Shelton. But that was bad on me. I gave everybody way too much credit, and I'm not giving them that much credit going forward. I need them to prove now, before I give them the benefit of the doubt, that they actually, you know, I need them to show in free agency, and, you know, if they need to go ahead and invest in the offensive line in with some actual draft capital here moving forward. And, you know, before I just say, okay, let's get gung-ho about it. But so I started the season thinking that they had done enough, where I was really optimistic about where they were going. And when they hit the bye at 4-2, and everything was going well, and they had basically just done everything really well against, they had their best offensive performance against the Jacksonville Jaguars in London. They're coming out of the bye, taking on the Commanders. I thought everything was set up, and they were going to, I thought they were going to, even though the schedule was going to be more difficult in the second half of the season, I thought they were set up for success. And, you know, the problem was, I never liked them bringing back Matt Eberflus. And, you know, I should have just been more wary of the fact that they wanted to bring him back. And I should not have allowed myself to get caught up in the hoopla. And I did. And I'm mad at myself for buying it. So once they had that, you know, the loss to the Commanders that they, you know, they were at fault for, they allowed that snowball to roll downhill and build. And it wasn't surprising to me the way it unfolded, the way it did. I'm just mad that I didn't kind of, I wasn't a little bit more skeptical heading into the season than I was. And so I allowed myself to get caught up and be a fan more than I should have. So, you know, as it was playing out, I wasn't really surprised. I guess the biggest thing was, I was surprised that they kind of quit and put forth the effort that they did against the Cardinals and the Patriots those 2 weeks after that Commanders loss, because those were, to me, the most disgusting losses, right? Mm-hmm. They did not show up against the Patriots at home, and the Patriots were bad last year, and they did really not show up against the Cardinals after having lost that really soul-crushing loss against the Commanders. So those two games were the games that, once those took place, it didn't surprise me at all that they went on to lose 10 in a row, because once they showed you they were capable of those two games, everything was on the table to me.
Were you ready to fire Poles?
I was ready to fire Poles if that's what it took to land Ben Johnson. But to the Bears' credit, like, I will say that I think Kevin Warren, it's really the first big move for him that's on his ledger as the president of the Bears, is that he was able to land Ben Johnson. And so I don't know if we give them enough, if they deserve enough credit or if they deserve the credit for working the back channels and knowing that Ben Johnson was open to working with Ryan Poles, if he indicated that was the case, or maybe just the Bears were fortunate that Ben Johnson grew up watching Cubs games with his brother and had a soft spot in his heart for Chicago. And because they had Caleb Williams, they had enough good things going for them that they didn't have to make the Ryan Poles move. Maybe, you know, so I think that when you look at, like, what Ryan Poles has done, you know, it looked better a year ago than it does now. A lot of the moves he made, you know, the Montez Sweat trade doesn't look good a year later. Like, you know, it looked good for because he played so well for the Bears in the, whatever it was, the 8 or 9 games that he played for them after the trade deadline last year. But this year he was banged up and hurt, but he wasn't really, if you look at all the guys who are making similar money as edge rushers to what he makes, the comparables, if you will, Montez Sweat did not give a season that was on the level of the guys who are making the same type of money. So you traded a second round pick and you paid him handsomely, and he didn't perform the way he did at the end of last year. So I think you're not getting your dollars worth from him. And so, you know, that was a big move by Ryan Poles. But now a year later, I'm not saying Montez Sweat is a bad player, but he didn't live up to the contract that he got this last season. You know, and then obviously DJ Moore, his season in his second year wasn't as good as it was the first year, and we're hoping that Ben Johnson will fix that. But you know, a year removed from where we're at with Ryan Poles, like his tenure, I think he's on shaky ground, I guess I'll say. But the good news for him is that I think Ben Johnson is the guy who can come in here and help him fix it. So even though if it took firing Ryan Poles to land Ben Johnson, I would have been fine with it. It didn't take that. So I think Ryan Poles has a path forward here where he can, you know, for his own sake, kind of like fix this roster. And, you know, a lot of the players that I was excited about for the Bears this previous season are still on the roster. And so I'm hoping that the reason I got all, caught up in the hoopla earlier in the offseason or before this season began, I'm hoping they can, you know, a lot of those same talented players will help the Bears kind of get out of, you just fix the offensive line and you give Montez Sweat another capable pass rusher on the other side of him. And I think there's a path where the Bears could be in the playoffs next year. That wouldn't shock me at all, Bill.
Right before I let you go, how'd you do in fantasy last year?
I had a pretty good year. I had a really good run because there were a couple of high stakes leagues where I had Saquon Barkley on my roster. So obviously he was the linchpin for those teams. I did not end up winning those leagues. I ended up the runner up in both those high stake leagues. Because I always say, in fantasy, listen, getting to the playoffs is really, I think, the true testament of a good fantasy player. Once you get to the playoffs, listen, it's very much kind of like the baseball playoffs. There's a randomness to the weekly game of fantasy football that you're at the whim of. And, you know, you hope your guys do well when the championship weeks roll around. But there's not much you can do if they don't perform, because it's a one-week sample, right? So I got bounced in the championship game of a couple of leagues, but the same teams that had Saquon Barkley that I ended up losing, I was the beneficiary in another league because I ended up winning a league where I was able to beat the team that had Saquon Barkley. So, it was a profitable season. So that's kind of like how I look at it.
Yeah.
I made money. So I was happy all in all with that. And I won a couple of titles. So all in all, a good season for fantasy football.
In my one league that I dominated, I was, 12-2, won 6 in a row going into the playoffs, and I had Lamar, so every week we were rolling, but get to the playoffs, and the round right before the championship round, I lose to my cousin, who was like a 500 team, and my other cousin, her brother, wins the whole thing. He was the last one into the league, I think barely keeps up with the NFL, and won like 10 in a row or something. It was crazy.
Yes. Now, see, I always, usually, hopefully in competitive leagues, it's hard to, every once in a while, there might be, maybe you get one player, like I said, like Saquon Barkley really was kind of like the difference maker for a lot of teams. He was kind of like the one guy who, if you had him, because a lot of people were able to grab him like at the back end of the first round or early second even. And so a lot of teams who got him, you got kind of the best running back, from a fantasy perspective. So a lot of teams were able to ride him deep for deep playoff runs. And to your point, Lamar as well. It's funny because you you triggered my memory. The team I like, the team that I did win the championship with, I beat the best team in our league all regular season. That team had Lamar Jackson and Saquon Barkley, and obviously, you know, was feeling really good about their playoffs. But again, I just caught them, you know, on the right week where neither guy ended up going crazy the week I played them in the playoffs, and was fortunate enough where I was able to advance and win the league. But, you know, that's, again, I don't get too upset. As long as I can make the playoffs, I look at it as that was a productive season. So I don't get too mad about, you know, at this point in my life, I don't allow fantasy losses to, you know, sway my mood one way or another.
What killed me was I forgot that the semis were 2 weeks or whatever. So I was leading after 1 week in both leagues and ended up losing in both.
Yeah, that's always a bummer. But I will say I do like leagues where you can where it's a 2 week matchup, because I do think that does take a little bit of the flukishness of a 1 week sample out of it. So I do like leagues like that. It obviously depends on how many teams you have and how many weeks you can. You want the playoffs to roll into, right? Yeah. Oftentimes, like, usually the one league I'm actually thinking about where I did win the championship, the final is 2 weeks, but the semifinals is only 1 week. So yeah. It's just the way the way we have it set up. And but obviously every league's different. But yeah, it's definitely my preference if you can to have a 2 week playoff matchup. I definitely think that takes a little bit of the luck out of it.
Yeah, it definitely does kind of even it out. Well, Jeff, thanks so much again for taking some time to chat the NFL with me. I have taken up way too much of your time, but always appreciate it. And just for the record, I am kind of pulling for the Chiefs. I'd rather see history win 3 Super Bowls in a row. I don't need to see the Eagles win. They've already won one, what was it, 2017 or 18 or whenever. So, yeah, I'm kind of pulling for the Chiefs.
Yeah, no, I'll be honest, I think the good thing about this matchup is that I will be happy either way, because, like you said, if the Chiefs become the first team to three-peat, that's pretty cool. Yeah. And Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Andy Reid, you know, that whole team is, I personally think they're likable. You know, a lot of times I feel like unless you're a Bills or Ravens fan, or maybe a team that played them, maybe the Niners, because they've been burned twice by it. The Chiefs, yeah. Like, so you can, if you have a rooting interest, I get why but in terms of if you're not, like, they're not an unlikable team by any means. Like, I understood why people disliked the Patriots, because, you know, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and I personally didn't, but I understood they were far more, yeah, in my opinion, unlikable than the Chiefs were by any means. Mm-hmm. So if the Chiefs go on to win their third straight Super Bowl, that's pretty cool to be the first team to ever do that. And at the same time, I love Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, if he ends up winning a Super Bowl, that's pretty cool as well. So
agreed.
I think I'll be happy with that either team winning. I know some people hate Philadelphia and the Philadelphia fans, so maybe. But I don't really, personally, I don't have too many cities that I, you know, just because you're where you grew up geographically doesn't really bring about any type of feelings for me personally. I think that's kind of like a silly way of looking at things. But so, you know, if Saquon Barkley ends up winning the Super Bowl, that'll be pretty cool as well. So yeah. I'll be happy either way with whoever ends up winning. I just want to see a good competitive game.
Yeah, no blowouts.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Jeff, like I say, great chatting with you. I'll hear you on the radio like I always do and see your tweets, and we'll keep up. So looking forward to the Super Bowl, and hope you have a great night.
No problem. Well, always a good time catching up with you as well. Thanks for the invite, man.